"Please, Father," she had longed to shout at his retreating back. "Please do not leave me here." She had wanted to say, "All my life you have stood between me and a world you say is dangerous and evil. How can you leave me now?" She thought to ask Saint Balbina to inflict him with boils and rashes so that he could not ride away from her. But knowing that he was a holy priest and she should obey him, she said only, "Yes, Father," as she had been taught, then added softly, "Remember to come back for me when you return from London." Now he was gone, and she stood, reluctant to go any farther. Things were going to happen, unknown things in this unknown place, and she was all unwilling and all alone. Never in her 14 years had she been alone, there being the priest and the manor servants, the coming and going of cooks and clerks and chambermaids, and the saints, always the saints, who responded when called upon, like St. Maurus, who had once told an unwilling Matilda, "I was able to walk on water when commanded to by my abbot. Obedience is all." Or St. Augustine, who helped her to subdue her evil will whenever her wishes came into conflict with those of Father Lufredus. As she remembered, tears with the salty taste of winter herring slid slowly down her cheeks. She turned and looked up and down the alley, searching for deliverance. It was a mere stub of a street off Frog Road, pocked with potholes and spattered with garbage, lined with narrow houses and shops of 2 stories in need of paint and repair. Many of the shops were stalls with shutters that opened upward to make an awning and down to make a counter, as was common. But some, like this one, had real solid wooden doors, as if what went on inside was too secret and mysterious to take place in the open. There was no deliverance here. She shivered, battered by the icy wind, thin and small, with long yellow braids and large, wary, sea-green eyes, she stood, carrying nothing but a bundle with a change of linen. No Sunday kirtle or surcoat, no poppet or other plaything, nothing of her mother or her father, or of the priest who had raised her. Staring again at the bright yellow bone on the door, she thought, "Bone setter. I am to assist a bone setter. What would this bone setter person be like?" She imagined a saintly figure, soft-spoken and learned, who healed with but a touch of her pale, thin hands. More likely, though, the bone-setter was an ancient crone, bony and wizened, with hairy moles on her chin and cheeks, and implements of torture all about her, racks and chains and huge wooden mallets with which to crush. Matilda stopped imagining and shuddered with dread. "Oh, spit and slime," she said, for they seemed the best words to express her feelings. "Spit and slime," which in Latin was saliva mucusque. It pleased her so well that she said it again, "Saliva mucusque," as she kicked at the wall of the shop with her big boot. "Come," called a voice from within. What had she done? The bone setter had heard her. Matilda could picture her on the other side of the door, fingering the hairy mole on her chin. "Come," demanded the voice. Matilda shifted her bundle, took a deep breath, and opened the door.